So your campaign has begun, or it's about to begin. You may remember last time that I mentioned you don't have to use that pilot episode approach. You can always just start right off with a mission, throw the pieces into a mission, and allow their character traits to develop while they're trying to pursue that mission. That's totally fine. So if you're doing that, and you've sort of skipped the pilot episode idea, this is where you join the rest of the class. We're going to learn about plot fields and how to set one up. What is a plot field? Well, it is a field from which a plot will grow. Now, core is very much a play to find out game. This is a phrase that originated at the Forge. And the whole idea, of course, now pretty common, is that you set up a bunch of objects and, like billiard balls bouncing off of each other as they pursue their own inertia, they cause plot to arise. Now, of course, some of those billiard balls are the PCs themselves. They are the POV, right, through which we view this world. They are, in fact, the people this story is about. And the plot field is what's happening around them. In a sense, the GM walks backward in front of the players, describing everything around them as they go. Now, that's a metaphor that I got from Meg Baker, and it's one that I really like. The setup, the surrounding, the 360-degree view all around you. The GM is doing that to prime that pump, to create that shared imaginary space that you can then latch onto. And hopefully by now, you've got some life shapers and a little bit of an emotional investment in your character, and you're ready to actually jump into what we call an adventure, right? Plot fields are how you do adventure design in core. And a plot field is really pretty simple. It's a network of related objects. There are four types of objects: places, NPCs, items, and events. And then there's a fifth thing that goes off to the side that we call an info list, and we'll talk about that last. Now, these places, NPCs, items, and events are all diegetic things in the game world. And there's a few different types within each object class. I can give you some suggestions, but of course there's no way I can set up every possible plot field. So bearing that in mind, we're going to work in general classes here. Often I start with the places. There's two types. There's regions and there's locations. The difference is regions are bigger. Locations are found within regions. The regions are going to draw heavily on your setting. This is where you barf all those adjectives. All the inspiration that came from the setting, you're going to describe that all around the surrounding landscape, environment, wherever it is. This is a region, and often it may be associated with its own encounter chances and encounter tables, up to you. Within regions, there are locations. This may be a room, a building, a house, a town square, an office, any particular spot. We could say a set built in the shared imaginary space upon which characters will resolve their actions. And you're going to make up a bunch of these as you go, but there's probably a few that you can think of that kind of seem germane and would make a lot of sense. It's good to put in at least one location where you can get some kind of assistance or aid, some sort of doctor or pharmacy or medical bay or automated, whatever. There's probably something like that. There is in most places. There's probably a couple dangerous things. After all, these games are fun if we introduce Jeopardy into various things. So think of your locations and regions as a place to put some environmental peril and a couple interesting resources, for instance. But as you're putting these locations down, also think about the kinds of characters that are likely to arise within your setting or within the framework of the plot field that you're setting up. Now, you don't want to write a story. Of course, that's going to happen. You're going to get your story. No matter what the PCs do, is going to end up being the story that grows out of this plot field. But remember, like we said several months ago in the talk on plot fields and plot lines, your NPCs are still going to have plans, at least your motivated ones do. Now, there are three general types of NPCs: functional, featured, and supporting. These words mean, pretty much what they do in theater, broadcast television, and movies. A functional character is a walk-on that may not even have any lines. They're basically there to serve some functional purpose within the game world. You know, a bartender, a cabbie, a clerk, this sort of thing. The featured NPCs, these are the ones that have a little bit of backstory, some color. They may represent various themes or various groups or various motivations at play within the plot field. And that means they're going to be some of those balls that go bouncing around, hitting each other on the billiard table. And then there's your supporting characters. Now, the word supporting doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship is one of support. This is more like in the Hollywood sense, where a supporting character is someone who's secondary, but still important to this adventure. They may or may not appear in later adventures, but they're important to this one. So they're a supporting actor, a supporting character, a supporting NPC. The most important ones have motivations, plans. Most of those have a location. And these are going to end up being either your antagonist, nemesis, bad guy characters, or they could end up being, you know, a mentor, an assistant, a skill to help, or a connection, a hireling, something that comes. They can work for you or against you, but you want to scatter a few of them out there. And they've got motivations of their own. Not all NPCs have motivations. Most NPCs' motivations are just, you know, to make it through the day, maybe eat better today than they did yesterday. And that'll do it for most NPCs. But you've also got NPCs who are going to be affected by those motivated ones, right? Take, for example, we could say the War of the Worlds, the Martians are definitely motivated NPCs. And the affected NPCs could break into groups. These are mostly supporting NPCs, but they could be groups. And what's important if you have different groups in your setting is to give each group a representative NPC. They don't have to be the legal or appointed voice of their group, but for our purposes, narratively speaking, they're the person from whom we hear that group's general opinion. It's a sort of a shorthand. There will be someone who speaks for each group, or for each theme, or for each concern that the plot field will entail. And there may be affected PCs as well. Whatever the NPCs are doing, especially if it's an NPC that you've got some history with, they may know you, right? They may be targeting some of their actions on you, or upon your loved ones, or the company you work for, or the side of the military struggle that you're a part of. Life shapers may be involved. Look at your PC's life shapers. Their home or their relationship. If you threaten these things, you get an automatic sort of a protection defense response, which can often tie into a life shaper. And if something in the outer plot threatens something in the inner plot, you get a strong crossover, a lot of psychic content, and a highly motivated player. So you look for opportunities like that. You don't have to go around threatening every relationship they have, but look at how their life shapers, their relationships, or the places that they're familiar with may be affected by the actions of these antagonistic NPCs. Okay, so you've got your places and NPCs sort of drawn on this map, and you can start drawing lines of relation between NPCs now. There's basically two kinds of relations that can appear between any NPCs or NPC groups. It'll either be supporting relation or a relation of force. So green for support, red for force. Or if you're not using colors, I'll draw an arrow. So an arrow going from point A to point B, or from group A to group B, or NPC A to NPC B, the arrow head is touching the affected party, right? So an arrow going from A to B means that group A has a forceful relationship, coercive, antagonistic, negative relationship with group B. They may be antagonists, they may be overlords, and whatever it is, it's got a negative spin on it. You can label that line rivals, war, autocratic bureaucracy, whatever. Now, if group A supports group B, I just take that arrowhead and I slide it all the way down to the other side of the line. So It kind of looks like a witch's broom, a little three-legged thing. So if the arrowhead is on the beginning side of the line, a little witch's broom, that means that Group A supports Group B. In fact, the three little legs, kind of like the struts of a tripod, you can imagine it supporting the other group. So now you've got a few places, locations, you've got a few NPCs or NPC groups. You're starting to draw lines of relation, either positive or negative, between them. You might start thinking about items. Some of these items, important things, stuff with pluses and extra die bonuses and magical capabilities or amazing informational gathering capabilities, items of some value, will either be possessed by NPCs or out there in the setting somewhere. Stick some interesting items in your world. Think about what kinds of stuff can be found in your setting, both in the hands of people and also just out there waiting to be found. Some of these things may be MacGuffins. A MacGuffin is something that everybody wants, often a singular thing, like the Maltese Falcon. But, there's gold in Nemnar Hills. If everybody's looking for gold, it kind of doesn't matter, singular or not. It is a MacGuffin, and lots of people will be motivated to seek it. That creates motion on the billiard table, and that makes those balls crash into each other, and that's what we want. We don't know where they're going to end up, but we do want them moving and crashing. Some of these items may be pivotal, like something that an NPC requires for their plan to go through. Remember the NPC's plans? You know, maybe step two of his plan is to obtain the magical jewel of the Nile or something, so that step three of the plan can occur. Those items, pivotal items, very important, usually going to be tied to an info bit, and we'll talk about info lists last. But remember, there's probably some resources out there, things that are maybe even treasures, found things of value, basically a reward for action, a reward for seeking, being perceptive, or moving through dangerous terrain. It's often a good idea to give your players not only a reward for doing it, but also to introduce them to the types of resources or rewards which are found in this setting. They don't have to be big things, although they could be vital. Sometimes a resource, depending on your campaign, might be required to even survive or to do whatever the task is that needs to be done. So, a few different types of items, scatter them around. Lastly, we have events. This is the fourth type of object in your diagram. Now, unlike the other things, events are only diegetic when they happen, right? And you may not have any events in your plot field at all. You can completely wing it. It depends on the narrative structure that you're looking for. But events might sweep through the setting in a way that fits the genre and tone of the world you're building. You know, storms or a war that is just going to be part of the background of the story because of the setting. Those types of things are events and may occasionally spin off smaller events. You know, a battle that spins off of the war, or people escaping from whatever the beast is that's coming this way. Those kind of events may be built into your narrative, like Act 1, the event hasn't happened yet. Act 2, the event is coming near and everybody's freaking out. And Act 3, the event is here and how do we deal with it? Maybe. But maybe the events are just something that are based on the setting and you roll them randomly, like a storm, a reality quake. These would be the kinds of things that the setting allows, but they only happen when you roll them. It's possible. Some events may be based on the narrative arc that you're shooting for. So if you have a traditional hero's journey that you're working on, you're going to want to put the threshold and the call to adventure, the mentor, and the dark night of the soul at around these places on the circle. You're going to need events to represent these things. You don't necessarily have to think of them all ahead of time, but you should think of the kinds of events that will happen in this setting. Some of them may be conditional. They'll only happen if something else happens. If you think of any of those, go ahead and jot them down. If you don't know what to do with these events that you've jotted down, pull them together into a list, stick a bunch of numbers down the side. You've just made a random events table. Whenever you're stuck, go to your random events table. Now, got our diagram, it's all drawn out. We know the kinds of things that can happen in this world. And some of them are gonna. But there's more than just physical objects and events in the world, right? There's information. Information, whether it's in the form of a book you read or a magical spell you come across, something that you perceive, observe, or even threaten out of another person, is often vital to the story that develops. And so, think about this. Now that you've got these objects, and you're looking at them, you're thinking about each one of these objects probably has one or two pieces of information about it. Each NPC, each location, each item, and maybe even each event. You can certainly think of some info. There's four types of info here. Common info, stuff everybody knows. You can make a list of stuff everybody knows in this town, in this world, in this setting, on this planet. Common info everybody knows that the PCs may not. You put a box in front of each one of these things, and when you say it out loud, check that box. Second type of info is contextual. This is stuff that only some people know. Everybody in a certain group might know it, or everybody in a certain profession might know it. Like all of the cops down at the station might know this critical clue that no one else knows because it hasn't been released to the press yet. That is contextual information. And if you talked to a random person on the street, there's no chance of getting it. But if you talk to a cop, there's a chance of getting it. Contextual. A third type is personal info. This is stuff only one character knows. It doesn't have to be directly tied to the plot that's going on, but it should be something that explains either that character's motivation or actions, or some other character's motivation or actions. In other words, the most useful personal info is always going to look at one of those relation lines. It's either going to expose it, reveal it, or perhaps even run counter to it. And the last kind of info is secret info. This is stuff that may or may not be known by NPCs, but can be found. A good example of secret info is certain spells that can be used to dispel other effects or banish certain creatures, say in the Cthulhu mythos. They're out there in the ancient books where you can find them, and if you find them, they'll be useful to you. But if you don't find secret info, this is one of the reasons we don't plan, right? Because if you've created secret info that's literally necessary for your plot to continue, you've created a bottleneck. And the only way to make sure that works is to create a railroad leading through that bottleneck. And we don't want to do that. So be careful with the secret info. The thing is, the whole reason that I write these lists, instead of literally writing the information under the name of the character who knows it or in the location where it can be found, is because depending on what the players do, they may have an idea, in fact they often have ideas, that take advantage of something that just happened to emerge at the table. It would be foolish of me to cut that off before it's even had a chance to grow. This is a play to find out situation. So I want to do everything I can to make sure that info is out there in the world. It can be found. But exactly how you're going to find it, well, that pretty much depends on you and what ideas you have. There may be more than one place to find that magic spell. Go ahead. This is a narrative arc you're creating of the moment. And whatever your players have done, it's not guaranteed to work out right. But you do want to guarantee it to work out in some dramatic way. After all, the secret info that the bookkeeper coughs up doesn't necessarily have to be good news. By now, you've got something that you can throw your characters into, and it's going to keep them busy for a while, maybe more than one session. And you've got enough stuff here so that you can sort of play with it. You can three-card Monty this stuff around. If the PCs are following a life shape or a goal of their own, then the setting and events and third-party characters can be used to either lean into that life shape or distract from it. We can either make it easier for you to fall into the temptation that you're trying to avoid as part of your life sugar, or we could use it to provide distractions from the thing you know you should be doing, which is your life sugar. If the PCs are following a mission, if you just went ahead and gave them a job, send them into the plot field, and there's a MacGuffin to be found or a task to be completed, well, now the life shapers become the secondary thing, and they can be used to complicate that mission or distract from it or make it easier or harder for part of the mission, but harder or easier for another part of the mission. So if you're following a life shaper, the mission events become secondary distractions in color. And if you're following a mission, your life shapers become secondary distractions and color. And when you play these two things against each other, you often get an A story and a B story. Again, this is something television does all the time. You've got an outer story, that's the physical events of the action, the adventure that happens in the world. But you've also got an inner story, right, with the internal conflict or the emotional depth of whatever the protagonists are going through. This is good media right here. But how does it end? Hell if I know. We're going to play to find out. Now, once we zoom in a little bit on that process, we have to start thinking about our genre and framing and narrative arc, leading and pacing, timing and tone, and other abstract aspects of GMing, which we'll have to wait for another night.